Comments made on the Serotalk Podcast Network are those of the individuals and do not represent Serotalk Corporation, its staff, management, board of directors, or third-party resellers.
Triple Click Home.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Triple Click Home, episode number 13. I am John Panarese, and I am joined by two of our regular contributors here, Elena Roberts. Lucky her is out in Hawaii on vacation. But for today, I am joined by, as rumors say, that he is on his way to Whoville after the show to steal Christmas from Cindy Lou Who, Mr. Peter Bosley.
You know, I know all you people thought you got away from me, but I'm back.
And though he was born in Texas, we will forgive him, Mr. Buddy Brown.
Hi.
So for today's episode, we have some recent Apple stories of interest, and we will also be going over some of what we figure are the more interesting things that happened throughout the course of 2012. That's right. All right. So
hits and misses.
True. For the first story that we have of interest, the headline says, Apple needs to learn how the internet works.
This isn't a new criticism at all.
No, exactly. I've been hearing this for years, going back to the old iTools days and the Mac.com, that they just can't get the file syncing idea down. There's all kinds of problems that people are reportedly having here and there. This particular person writes about issues with their contacts. Is that correct, if I remember correctly?
Yeah, they like contacts disappear. And I've never had contacts actually disappear. I've had multiples of contacts.
That's about it.
And
that's all.
Well, I did have one funny thing, and I'm not sure what caused it, and I don't even remember what I eventually did to straighten it out, but my iPhone and all sorts of things on my Mac thought that I was my younger sister.
Buddy, did you have a surgery that we didn't know about?
Yeah, I was going to say. No. I wasn't going to touch that one.
But yeah, well, you know, things kept saying like, I'm sorry, Lisa, or whatever, or you know, my younger sister is Lisa, and I kept telling, or something would fill in my contact details, and it would come up as filled in as my sister, and I'm like, this ain't right, what's going on here? But that's the worst that happened.
Yeah, I've had
that's
duplicates.
Actually pretty bad, if you come to think of it.
Yeah,
but I'm not even sure that was an iCloud problem. I'm not sure exactly what caused it, but
your Mac had an identity crisis.
My Mac had an identity crisis. That's kind of bad. And I don't think anybody can argue that Apple's great at this sort of online service. Now, it's getting better. I think iCloud is definitely better than MobileMe and .Mac before it. But I don't think anybody can argue that Apple knows how to do the online content delivery and cloud. I hate that thing correctly. I think they're getting better. I think that they've... You know, looking at this interview we were going to talk about later with Tim Cook, he talks about opening more data centers. I think, yeah, they finally figured out you can't have a data center.
Right. You got to have one, right.
Which is going to help.
Right. And I think it has been improving. I mean, I've only, way back in the beginning, I had problems with duplicate contacts. But I mean, knock on wood, I've really had very little difficulty with iCloud for quite a while now. I don't know about you, Peter. I don't know if you've run into anything.
I don't use Apple's cloud services for very many things. But, you know, at work, I do see a lot of people with issues with it. And I think it really comes back down to when you look at Apple's core competencies, building online services and building systems to scale really hasn't ever been their thing.
It never has.
You know, they don't even build server software that really does a lot of that scaling. I mean, they've got Lion Server that sort of has some server components to it. But if it gets any bigger than one machine, you're pretty much SOL. There's no load balancing and all these other things that all these other companies are doing.
Well, how much did they really have to do what they've done, though? Because, I mean, like, really, OS X is BSD Unix underneath anyway, so how much did they really have to do?
Right.
And I think what we'll see happening, because we've been seeing some hiring activity from Apple lately. They've been hiring some people to have some expertise in this on this front, and I think that we'll see things get better, or I hope so, anyway. It's really one of those things that you look at and you say, well, they make great hardware, and nobody disputes that. I think they're the undisputed
hardware king. Right, that's the real deal.
But, you know, the direction that the consumers have been going, consumer services have been heading into a more centrally hosted model where your devices are really only gateways to the stuff that you have online. And so Apple's going to have to get better at this, or they're going to find themselves in a place where everybody uses their hardware to access third-party services, and that's not how they want it to go down.
The irony really is that Apple really pushed that direction, even though the iPhone and stuff didn't really do well, and you had to bring it back to the Mac to sort of make things work and sync up and all that sort of thing. It's a bit ironic that Apple sort of pushed things in that direction, even though they weren't really very good at it, as far as everything being accessed remotely or not being stored on your local thing. I mean, you're talking about iTunes and digital music downloads and all that sort of thing. Maybe they didn't anticipate that it would go in the exactly in the direction that it went, but it is kind of ironic. My other thought, though, was, you know, again, looking at this interview that we'll be talking about here in a little bit, Tim Cook says he knows he's not good at everything and he wants to surround himself by people who are experts in their field, basically. And that's one of his real strengths. And I don't think that was
how a leader really should be.
Well, and I don't think that was one of Steve Jobs' strengths at all.
No, no, it wasn't.
He wanted to do everything or, you know, be the guy that sort of masterminds everything. And Tim Cook doesn't seem to roll like that. So it'll be interesting to see what direction that takes us.
All right. Well, it is going to be interesting to see. I mean, I think it's going to get better. I don't know how quickly it's going to happen, but I think we will see improvement as time goes on.
Yeah, I think it's going to improve. The question is it going to improve fast enough? Well, we'll just have to wait and see, I guess.
Right. All right, well, the second story we have here talks about the contract-free iPhone and how it is benefiting every consumer in America. This is one of my pet peeves as far as cellular service goes, that being the providers and the outrageous costs when you're paying $80, $90, $100-plus dollars a month for your data plan and your voice plan and everything else. So I applaud if this is true, that these contract-free iPhones are going to help us in the long run. I think it's a great thing.
What I want to know is, with these contract-free iPhones that instead of subsidizing on the front end and locking you into this contract that takes an act of Congress to get out of, T-Mobile apparently is going to do it another way and offer a cheaper plan where you buy the phone either all outright or broken up into payments over time, which ends up as the same thing as the two-year contract in a way. But what I'm wondering is if the devices that they provide are going to still be locked to T-Mobile or if they're going to start selling completely unlocked devices.
Yeah, and that kind of ties to a story we were going to get to a little later, but we might as well include it now because it's sort of part and parcel the same thing. And that's how T-Mobile's plans are going to supposedly change the wireless industry because of the fact that they're not going to be subsidizing the phones, and thus the rates are going to be a bit cheaper. So it's going to be an interesting combination to see how this affects AT&T and Verizon Wireless and so forth.
Especially since T-Mobile has lower rates anyway. Of course,
if
they also have a smaller footprint.
If it catches on, you've got a chance to really change things, but it doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to catch on. And I think that as a society, how we purchase cell phones is sort of, well, we pay this monthly fee and they give us this cheap or free phone. And a lot of people don't really think about how much they're paying for that subsidized device throughout the contract period that they have. A lot of people think, well, the cell phone carrier is doing me a favor when they're really not.
So whether
we can adjust our consumer attitude towards these things or not is going to be the bigger question.
I think it depends on how T-Mobile spins it. If they do it right, the consumer isn't going to care. Because they're sort of easing us into the idea, I think, because, you know, they're not saying, well, you have to buy this device outright. You can still buy the device for $99 down plus, you know, whatever over X number of months, which is kind of what the subsidized phones are doing, except they just don't tell you that that's what they're doing.
Right.
And you have an extortionist kind of thing to get out of if you decide you don't want to stay with them anymore. If they spin it right, the consumer may not care. Of course, the other point that these articles are making is kind of, you know, the cell phone industry is sort of monkey see, monkey do. And say they see T-Mobile doing this, they may decide, well, we don't like eating the cost of these cell phones and so forth.
Remember that T-Mobile is not an influencer in the industry.
No, they're not. No, they're like number gazillion or something in the food chain. But the other thing is, though, that the bigger players may do one of two things. They'll either say, oh, this is a good idea. Let's roll with it ourselves. Possibly not. They could do that because they don't like eating that cost and so forth. Or they might say, well, this is a horrible idea, and they'll use that against T-Mobile. And
I think that's our point, though. They're not eating the cost.
It's all to the good for them.
It benefits them if they don't adopt this model, because what happens is a lot of people keep their phones. There's a guy at work that has kept his phone for 5 years.
It's all to the good for them because, you know, they've got you locked into a contract where you as the customer have no negotiating room.
No, you're not understanding what I'm saying. You buy a phone from Verizon and you pay $100 a month for a plan, and maybe they figure that $20 a month of that covers the subsidy of your device over a 24-month period.
Yeah, no, I gotcha.
You get to the end of that 24-month period and you don't renew your contract, but you still pay the same monthly fee. You don't pay to upgrade your device right away. It's all money-making for them after that,
yeah,
after that
gravy.
Point. Once they've paid for your device, they're just going to the bank.
My brother's had his phone for 4 or 5 years now, and you know they're definitely making money off of him at this point.
Yeah, that's all true. I don't know. There was something that I'd been reading, though, about how, of course, this may have been from one of our iPhone not liking colleagues, basically saying that the cell phone companies are kind of not real happy with the iPhone anymore because they don't have the control over it or whatever, but they're still having to subsidize it and so forth. But it sure seems like nobody's really that upset with the iPhone.
No. Considering the numbers of millions that all of these companies tend to sell as soon as they pick them up, I don't think they have much to complain about.
See, that's the other thing that just puzzles me is these tech analysts and tech pundits are all going on about how the iPhone is stale and the design is stale and it's nothing revolutionary anymore and why do we care anymore? And, you know, all these other companies are doing other more interesting things. And but people are still buying these things like hotcakes.
Yep. Yep.
I think Apple's figured out that people don't care that something's not necessarily changed just for change's sake.
I just don't see, you know, at least for the time being, I just think that they've got a formula that works.
And it all may change in the next one. Who knows? But for now, yeah, I mean, people are happy with them. Their iPhone 5. You know, and even with some of the flaws that people have found and what have you, is selling like gangbusters.
I mean, the bottom line is one can only hope that the pricing of this stuff does come down for contracts, because like I said, that is one of my biggest complaints about the smartphones, is that how much you pay a month just
to have
the right and privilege to use their wonderful service.
Yeah, it's crazy. It really is. And if you want to change carriers or anything, you can, but...
Well, like you said, it's virtually an act of Congress you need just to get out of these
contracts,
of these contracts.
I don't know why people try to get out of their contract. They signed a contract. They didn't pay attention to what it said.
No, if you want to get out of it, you have to, you know, you agreed to it. You have to pay the $300 early termination fee prorated per month by $10 or $15 a month to get out of it. And, you know, you can do that, but of course that pays for your smartphone right there.
I'm curious to see how this is going to unfold as time goes on. All right, so Buddy had alluded to the next story here, which is the lengthy interview that Tim Cook gave a short time ago in regards to his first 15 months as the CEO of Apple. And according to what he says, basically, he hates office politics, but he doesn't mind people emailing him. So what did you guys think? If you got to read the whole, I didn't get to read every.
Oh yeah, I read the interview, and I thought it was really interesting. It was Tim Cook just comes across as this real person. He comes across as, like he said, somebody that could be sitting at your dinner table. Could be that's a carefully crafted persona, but I didn't get that feeling.
No, I think he's pretty genuine. His approach is definitely a bit different than Steve Jobs.
Oh, you know, a lot less flamboyant, for sure.
Yeah, exactly. And he seems to be a bit more practical and negotiating and all that stuff, you know, where Steve Jobs was just full throttle, full
speed. Like my way or the highway.
Yeah. You know, I tend to think that he's doing a great job, no matter what he does. I feel bad for him sometimes because it's one of these things where you're following in the shadow of an icon. So whatever you do is going to be put under the microscope.
Right.
And every little move that Apple makes, right or wrong, it's going to reflect 100 times more on him. So I wouldn't want to be in his shoes personally.
Yeah, no kidding.
I would. He makes a lot of money.
He does that.
That's true.
But I do think that whatever we can say about Steve Jobs, I think he chose well.
Yes.
I tend to take these interview the CEO things with a little bit of grain of sand.
I'm sure that he was prepped. I'm sure that this wasn't just, all off the cuff.
Just because you don't sit down and interview the CEO of Apple and get, you know, an unbridled look at him. This he loves it when you email him thing, I have a feeling he doesn't love it when you email him. I have a feeling he doesn't even read your emails.
I don't know. Steve Jobs did.
Steve Jobs may have read your emails, or it could have been somebody on his executive office team reading your emails and responding in the Steve Jobs style. Who knows?
That's a point. Why don't one of you guys try writing to Tim and see if he writes back to you?
I thought
I'll get right
that.
On that.
Yeah, I could tell. I mean, from what I've read, it was a good interview. And like I said, I feel bad.
It was a good interview. And I still think that, you know, regardless whether, you know, however much he was prepped or whatever, I think Steve Jobs chose well.
All right. So now we have what I think is kind of a no-brainer at this point. It says that an analyst thinks that an iPhone 5S is due in June with a better camera. NFC and multiple color options.
I'm all over that.
I guess you had to think long and hard into your crystal ball to figure that one out, considering the 3GS, the 4S.
3GS, 4, 4S, 5. Yeah.
I don't know, guys. I'm not sure if I'm buying this one.
No?
As in, not sure I'm believing it, not that I won't buy it.
Yeah, I'm sure you'll buy it. In fact, I think that I'd be very surprised if you did not buy it.
I think if we see one, it'll be in March. When we see new
you
iPad.
Think so that early?
No, I don't think it'll be that early. I'm thinking
you can't release a phone in June and then release another one in October.
Yeah, they're gonna have
to come
up with a 6 month.
I don't think they're gonna. I don't think they're gonna release in June and then October.
I bet we'll see the iPhone hit a 2 a year. If they're gonna start doing that with iPad, they'll start doing it with the iPhone too.
Yeah, well, that's all the speculation says.
Yeah, but are they gonna really start doing it with the iPad? I think that the iPad thing. They just released iPad 4th generation because they needed to stick the Lightning connector in it.
I don't know. Maybe. We'll see what happens,
maybe.
I guess.
Everybody's going to speculate over the next couple of months, you know, that there's already
iPhone...
I'm not
going to speculate.
There's already iPhone 6 prototypes or something that's floating around out there. So, you know, you're going to hear this junk for the next, you know, 6+ months at least.
Yeah, people need something to talk about.
Yeah, you better not speculate, buddy. It's probably
I'm absolutely not going to speculate. We all know what my record is, and I will not speculate.
Well, maybe we do need you to speculate, just so we could go in the opposite direction. Any other thoughts, Peter, on this? Or
are we really
move on? Okay.
I think we probably will see a 5S next year, but I just think it'll if it's going to be a 2-cycle thing from now on, we'll see it early.
I still don't think that that is a move that makes sense to make a regular 2-product release per year thing. I think that the iPad thing was kind of an aberration.
Speaking of things that happened last month that I didn't get to talk about, the iPad mini. I got my hands on one.
I did too.
At first, I thought that it was going to be just a big phone and I wouldn't care about it. And it was, you know, kind of ridiculous that they pandered to the we want a 7-inch tablet thing, but this thing is small. And
it is.
Yeah,
it's
surprised. I was surprised myself.
If I was going to buy an iPad for myself, I would get the mini.
I think I would too, except that I'm not sold on it until I see the second generation, because I have a feeling
that the next one will be Retina.
Yeah,
the next one will be Retina. It'll have a better processor, and we'll still get LTE in it.
I agree with all of that, but I mean, as far as form factor, yeah, I think the mini is really just right. It's the weight of it. It feels good.
Yeah, I'd rather have a device the size of the mini than the full size, I think.
In fact, Melanie said that, you know, of course, she just wants the bigger one because she likes the bigger screen. She can see it better. But as far as size and weight and everything, I really think that they hit it just right with the mini.
I'm happy with the one. I have the third generation, but I think when the time comes, it's going to be very difficult to decide whether I want to go with the mini or go. I was of the mind for a while that I wouldn't bother with the mini, but I've gotten to hold it twice now. And the second time was just, you know, I could see why people are very taken with it.
I've got one sitting in a box over here with stuff on it that is getting ready to be wrapped up for Christmas.
Oh. So you're sending it to me?
No.
Oh. Too bad. I mean, you could at least be a little bit more gentle with that negative response.
I think my daughter would be, well, actually, she doesn't know yet, but if she knew, she'd be very upset.
I'm not going to get between a kid and the iPad mini. No way.
You bought your child an iPad mini? No way my parents would have done that for me.
Yeah, but I'm cool.
I want you as a dad.
that might be taken a little far.
Yeah, yeah.
We're hoping that it will encourage her to read more.
My guess would be it'll encourage her to play more than read.
Well, it might do both.
I know a few people that have gotten their, not young, but, you know, younger children iPads, and it's actually reflected quite well in their schoolwork. I don't know why that is, but just the two people that come to mind.
We have lots of educational things loaded onto it. And of course, before it gets to her, it will be all nice and locked down so she can't buy in-store app purchases and watch porn videos and all that stuff. So, well, you know, not easily.
Right.
I was going to say.
To the best of your ability, yes, as far as you know.
To the best of my ability, as far as I am aware.
Changing gears here a little bit. Again, this was no surprise to me. Google recently just released their official Maps app for iOS, which features, turn-by-turn navigation. I didn't download it myself. Have any of you guys played with it?
Yeah, it's inaccessible as all get out.
Is it?
Yep.
Now, interestingly, of course, people are saying that, no, it's perfectly accessible. It's just that the interface is crap.
No.
At least that's what Apple Viz is pretty much. That's what their position seems to
no.
be. I have not looked at it. But they said, oh, yeah, all the buttons are labeled and all this, but it's not easy to use. Well, if it's not easy to use, well, that may not make it inaccessible. It certainly makes it unpleasant. So unpleasant matters.
They said it's accessible?
They did.
Oh, really?
They did.
Well, I haven't touched it, so, and I haven't no plans either. To really deal with it, so.
I'm not really interested in messing with it.
Yeah, but it has public transit directions, which would be nice.
I mean, you're saying it's not accessible, Peter.
Because, like, some of the buttons, while they're labeled, they're not all exposed at once, so even though VoiceOver can see them, you still can't tap on them.
That's okay. Kind of crap.
Anyway,
you can get it for free and try it yourself.
It's free.
It's out, and you can get it. Yep.
Really, I wish that Google and Apple would just get along.
It's starting to happen more under Tim Cook.
If Google would build the online services and Apple would build the hardware, the duo together would be pretty much unstoppable.
Oh, who knows? Like Buddy said, with Tim Cook, there might be a change in direction.
It's starting to happen more, I think.
On our last current events story, and this is one that has certainly gotten a lot of attention, good and bad, in the blindness community, if you are a subscriber to the different Mac lists for the blind users. And that is iTunes 11 was also recently released with the simplified interface. I'm loving it personally. I think it's a great improvement. I never had problems with 10 that a lot of people were always complaining about, but I think 11 certainly makes it a bit easier to handle.
Windows,
not so much.
Yeah, okay.
Well,
I haven't tried it on Windows yet. That's my next thing at some point soon, maybe over the Christmas break.
Well, there are some things that definitely don't work. For example, I have not found with any of three screen readers a way to hear song samples in the iTunes store. On the Mac, you can do a voiceover space to select a track in the table, and then you get a play button. But there doesn't appear to be a way to do this with Windows.
You do that on the computer?
The biggest thing that's been a problem. Do what?
Listen to song samples?
Okay.
Yeah,
interesting.
I mean, iTunes store, yeah.
I don't work in iTunes very much. In fact, if I do it at all, it's something's gone terribly wrong.
I don't do a whole lot with iTunes unless I'm specifically going in to look for something or buy something or something, or if something's gone terribly wrong. But generally, I'm not really a fan of iTunes. I don't use it as my music player.
Oh, okay. See, I do. I use it all the time, and I teach people on it, so it's kind of...
At least on the, like I say, again, on the Mac, and I think actually on Windows to some extent, I think it's faster. Like, I think they trimmed it down some, if not quite a bit.
Well, you don't have the busy signals from the store.
It seems to be a lot snappier. No, you don't.
Well, I just want to mention a couple of things from the benefit of for people who are using iTunes 11, and if it hasn't been brought to their attention, because there's a lot of complaints about people having quote unquote lost the source list, and you could,
but you
no,
haven't.
You haven't.
It's just
right.
different.
But you could bring it back by revealing the sidebar from the view menu or Option Command S on the Mac,
and then it looks like the old iTunes.
Right, exactly. And then you have the status bar that you could also reveal from the view menu as well. So, you know, just relax.
You can make it look like old iTunes, but I got to say, with the new one, I do like that you can select the different things just from a drop-down.
That's the way I use
it. From a pop-up menu. I like that a lot. I'm not sure that I'm necessarily a fan of the grid view of albums because it's hard to get. Like, if you got an album like in the middle of the grid view somewhere, it's a little bit more difficult to get.
You can't do first letter navigation. That's the one thing that kind of ticks me off.
You can't do first letter navigation, and so you have to kind of go through all of them. And if you go to the end, if you got a big collection of albums, it could take a while. But that would really be my only complaint about the new interface, at least, like I say, for the Mac. For Windows, still not really a fan. For the Mac, I don't use it a lot just to play music, but it's definitely a lot easier to deal with. Actually, I do use it to listen to podcasts sometimes if I just sit around the house or whatever and don't have the iPhone plugged into something that sounds good.
All right. Well, for those interested, it's out there and there's a lot of chatter on the list, so read away. All right. I guess we will take a break to hear from our sponsors. We'll be back.
Are you tired of browsing through thousands of sites just to find the news you want? What about recipes, shopping, radio stations? Wouldn't it be great if there was a single place where you could find all these things and a lot more? There is. Discover Samnet with the widest and most complete content ever assembled for the blind community. And speaking of community, you can use Samnet's voice chat, instant messaging, and users forums to communicate with family, friends, and others who share your interests. To learn more about Samnet, please visit www.serotech.com. That's www.serotech.com. Or call us toll-free at 866-202-0520. We're Serotech, the accessibility anywhere people.
Welcome back. We have returned. And for this part of the podcast, we are going to do a little bit of Apple in review stories. Some of the
back in time.
Yeah, some of the things that were interesting, maybe even a little controversial in some instances, regarding Apple that we have covered or may have missed to some degree over 2012.
And some of it seems so long ago.
That's it.
Yes.
That's your first
yes,
stuff.
It does.
That was my first thought when I was looking at some of this stuff. But you guys remember back in January when Apple had their whole iBooks education event in New York, announced the whole iBooks authoring and the improvements to iBooks, et cetera, et cetera.
And then we heard nothing else about
it. Yeah, it was kind of like crickets afterwards.
Except for the lawsuits.
Well, yeah, that's par for the course. But I mean, Apple has always been about education, you know, going way back to the 80s. So in a lot of instances, this was
too easy.
Yeah. So this was really not a surprise that they wanted to get more tied to the education market. And of course, there is that point that was made in the article about Steve Jobs' book where he was talking about the education industry basically being sort of unplucked at this point. So any thoughts on that, or shall we just continue on here?
I kind of remember at the time we all kind of went, oh, that's interesting. Okay, next. And apparently the rest of the industry kind of felt the same way.
All right, well, then we have this one, which is one of my favorites, that the iPhone turned 5 years old this year. That I was really blown away by. And all I can remember was Steve Ballmer's famous interview where he said, oh, who's going to buy a $400 phone? But guess what, Steve?
And then people stood in line around the block to buy the $500 phone.
Right.
And, well, it was really interesting to see how it evolved, right? Because the first iPhone was a phone. It had no apps.
Right.
I mean, like, I think it played music, but it was a phone. And I think it might have had a web browser, but it was a phone.
Well, yeah, that was it. I mean, yeah. And just think of how it's progressed. I mean, even for us, when we got accessibility in the 3GS and how far it's come for the blind, you know, as far as just over the years that the iPhone,
yeah, even just
on.
From the 3GS to the 5, people that I would never, ever have thought would get an iPhone have gotten iPhones.
Yes, that's amazing. It's amazing how many blind people are using the iPhone now.
It really is. I mean, and 5 years is a pretty amazing milestone.
Not
in
a
itself,
boutique anymore.
For us,
no,
definitely not a boutique anymore.
So you have a 5, right, Peter? You and I are the only ones who have the 5, or Buddy, do you have a 5?
No, I don't have a 5.
Okay, so it's just me and Peter. I don't remember.
I have to wait for my Sprint contract.
And Elena, I don't think, had the 5 either, right?
No, she had just gotten the 4S a little bit after I got the 4S, I think.
But anyway, the iPhone did turn 5, and it's come quite a long way. You know, we'd like to think that there's still the best is yet to come as far as the iPhone comes and what it will bring for us, hopefully as far as accessibility as well. And then, besides the iPhone, we also had the year of iPads. We had the iPad versus the iPad 2 versus the iPad 3 versus the 4th gen iPad versus the iPad mini.
Mini.
And so boy, we might as well just group all this stuff together. Yeah, there was going to be Apple. We'll never make them.
Yeah, we messed that one up.
We really messed that one up. And I can't even take sole credit for that because we were all on that page.
I just never thought, because it's funny, because I remember it's how this stuff contradicts itself, because I could swear I remember reading quotes from Steve Jobs that there would never be a mini.
He did say that. You're not delusional. He did say the 7-inch tablet, there's no room in the market for that. That's just a silly idea. He wasn't, at least at that time, that's what he thought. But, you know, like Tim Cook said, he was famous for his ability to change his mind on the fly.
Yeah, well, it's true. It's true. And I guess, you know, and I also read some places that said, well, at the time, he didn't think that a 7-inch tablet would support the kind of processor and battery life and stuff that would be required for a really good tablet, and how the technology has changed significantly to the point where it is viable to have a 7-inch tablet, you know, blah, blah, blah.
Whatever the case, we really blew that one. And it's really funny now that, you know, after the fact, we're going back, we can listen to, they'll never have an iPad mini. That's just a silly idea. It's not going to happen. Never, ever, 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 ever. I really like the iPad mini.
Right. Well, I mean, what do you guys think overall of the evolution of the iPad? I mean, I owned an original one. I didn't get the 2. And then I got the 3, the third generation one. I didn't get the 4th because I just got the 3rd one back in March and I didn't see a purpose or a reason to go out and buy one. So what do you guys think? Do you guys own iPads or different versions of them?
Melanie has an iPad. So there's an iPad in the house. It's a second generation. I got her a first generation and then that got stolen. And so then we got the 2nd and she loves it. She can't do without it. It may as well be attached to her person. It really, really is that integral to what she does every day. And I remember when the iPad first came out and people said, oh, it's just a big iPod Touch. And, you know, no one's going to buy this thing. And it's, again, all the tech pundits called that wrong,
right,
too.
Exactly, because I can think of several people.
I mean, they really called that wrong, too. But it really is, at least in our house, it's an entertainment thing for Melanie. She just has it all the time. It helps her with education. We cyber school our daughter, and so she uses it for educational support and has lots of educational apps on it, like I mentioned before. So, yeah, it's definitely an integral part of our house.
I have an iPad 3, and I don't really find myself using it every day, but it does kind of live in the living room, and it gets picked up anytime I'm down there. You know, maybe we watching something or cooking dinner, rarely cooking dinner. Or something like that, where I'll just need to quickly check my email or look up something real quick or make a quick call on Skype or something of that ilk. I think the iPad mini would probably move around a little bit more than the larger iPad, but my guests use the iPad a lot. They'll use it to look stuff up online and what have you, show me videos they want me to see, whatever. So it gets used. I wouldn't say that it gets used every day, though.
Myself, I use the iPhone more.
Yeah, but I definitely
Melanie,
use the iPhone.
Yeah, she couldn't live
more
without the thing.
My iPad is predominantly, I use it for reading and some web browsing if I really want to get a feel for a website with the screen and such, but I use the iPhone quite a bit more. So now,
here we go, Tim Cook.
Yeah, we go back to our good buddy here. It says that Tim Cook prefers settling to suing, and we also have a story. About Apple's $1 billion lawsuit victory over Samsung. So you take that as you might, but according to what they say, Tim Cook would prefer to settle than fight the legal battle, which seems to be a pretty big departure from the way Steve Jobs operated his thermonuclear war, quote unquote, that he was waging against Google.
The Samsung thing is a big deal and so forth, but there have been quite a few settlements. I'm thinking of HTC right now.
Right. I think you're going to start to see that more, because when you have a long, drawn-out lawsuit, who really wins?
The lawyers.
Exactly. The kind of money that these companies are spending on lawyers So
those guys win every time.
Yeah. So it makes perfect sense in this day and age that Tim would rather settle out of court than have to go through the whole ordeal of it. I mean, look at the whole Samson trial and how that went and all the different crap that really got generated from it.
Yeah, and with being so high profile, you know, you never know how the press and the publicity is going to go, if it's going to go your way or not. And whether we like it or not, these things do get tried in the court of public opinion.
Right. So, you know, Apple was, some instances, was viewed as the bully pushing around Samson, and they won all this money, and, you know, like, they really needed more money. But, you know,
I don't know, guys. You have to understand that our patent system is a little bit messed up. So,
yeah.
Well, yeah, that's a given.
I was just going to get to that. And, you know, if you want to explain that, Peter, because that is a good point.
So the way the patent system works is, if you have a patent and you've patented a process, or really meant to be a proprietary process for making something or making something happen, you have to defend it. So what that means is that if someone comes up with something that's too similar to your patent and you don't take action against them, what they can argue is that your patent is essentially invalid. So we can argue all day long whether technology patents in the form that they take now are good ideas, or whether we need patent reform legislation or whatever. But the state of the system right now is that if you want to protect your patent, if you want to have a patent on something or a process, you have to defend it. So they sort of don't have a choice.
Well, sure, it has to. I mean, the lawsuits have to be filed in some cases, and
essentially, what I'm saying is,
you need to get involved.
You can't
sure.
go along and say "kumbaya," everything's okay.
No, I don't think any of us were saying that that's what should happen or was happening.
I'm a big believer in intellectual property, and that you do have to defend your ground. I mean, if you, and it's like I said, I got into it. My brother is sort of the anti-Apple guy in my family, so, you know, he always is very hard on anything that Apple does. So we got into a discussion.
He's your family's Joe Steinkamp.
Yeah, I was going to say that, but I wasn't going to touch that, but you said it. But so, you know, we had this discussion, and I said, look, you know, what happened if you invented this process, this idea, and you started selling it, and you were doing quite well for yourself, and then I came along and used your idea and did some other things, and I'm making as much money as you are. You know, how would you feel about that? That I stole your idea. I didn't do any of my own research and development. I just took your idea and I just repackaged it, and I'm calling it mine. That's the way people don't necessarily see how all this stuff. And I know it's like, you know, they compare it to little kids fighting in the playground, but it really isn't. But that's my opinion. Okay, so any further thoughts on that? I guess not.
I think that about covers it.
All right, so then
with all the patent stuff, my brain just takes a vacation.
When this was all going down, I didn't bother to read every single little article that discussed that Samson's doing this and Apple's doing this and blah, blah, blah. I don't care. All right, so then, of course, we had the iPhone 5 launch with the new screen and the Lightning connector. And I don't know what got more attention, the iPhone itself or the controversy that first started off with the Lightning connector, and then it was Apple's scheme to get more money from the consumer by changing the adapters and blah, blah, blah. And
by the way, I'm starting to see third-party Lightning cables
all over the place, as what you were expecting, you know, which I told somebody way back when, that it would just be a matter of time before you would see that happening. But as I said earlier, I think Peter and I are the only ones with the 5, and I'm to this day still quite happy with the purchase. I use the phone every day. I just still can't get over its size and its weight. It's just so small. And not that I wouldn't be considering buying a 5S, should it come out, whatever, next year. But still, I think the 5 is a great device.
I got to see one, and yeah, it's definitely thinner and lighter. Like people said, it looks kind of like a 4S stretched out a little bit.
Well, that's just it. It's like the 4S in that regard. But it's just people, you know, when they say 20% thinner and lighter, you don't really think
of
that.
Yeah, it makes a difference.
Yeah, until you actually hold one in your hands.
Yeah, it,
you know,
it
that's
is crazy.
You see.
It's crazy.
It makes a difference in this attention to detail that Apple does with their hardware. It's so well balanced in your hand.
Well, here's the counterpoint to that, though, right? It's nice and thin, but you end up putting the thing in a case anyway. So, right. You know, not sure that really necessarily matters that it's
thin. My 4S isn't in a case.
Well, I have a pretty thin case for it, so it didn't really balloon it up too much. I have not an out-of-box, it's a rip-off out-of-box case, but still, the phone is still very, compared to my 4S, it just still feels thinner and lighter to me, and using it all the time.
You know, somebody's going to say that's all psychological, right?
Yeah, psychological. I could still beat him over the head with it and it'll hurt, but, you know. That's what I said to my brother, the Apple basher. Any other thoughts on the 5? Any concluding thoughts? Do you regret your purchase, Peter, or do you...
No.
Okay. Well, then we also had some Mac news. We had the Retina Display MacBook Pros models, the 15 and then later the 13-inch, which, of course, the 13-inch came out after I'd already bought my MacBook Pro 13 in July. Not that the Retina Display really is going to mean much to a blind guy, but still, it was just my luck that that's how it worked out.
That's how my luck rolls, too.
And then we had some upgrades to other hardware as well, the Mac Minis.
Fusion Drive.
Yeah, the Fusion Drive with the iMacs. So, there was a lot of steps forward, I guess you'd call it, with all of Apple products when you look at the whole year as a whole. So it gets you, of course, curious as to what they can do next year to top what they've done. We had Mountain Lion that came out in July, which was the 10.8 version of their operating system, Mac OS X. All you guys, I'm sure, are using it by now, correct?
Yep. More convergence and more...
Right. Very
iPhone-looking things.
Definitely moving towards iOS. You know, that was kind of what everybody was talking about when Lion was released, how it was starting to make that shift, and now it went steps further with the notification center and, you know, making the iCal to calendars and the address book into contacts. Apple just, you know, the whole consumer thing, you know, appealing to the consumer, making a device that everybody recognizes.
Everything all one kind of fluid experience.
Right. You know, and there's already rumors about a 10.9 going to be in the works next year, links or something such, who the heck knows. So it'll be curious to see what 2013 is going to bring.
But it's going to be a text-based browser front end there, anyway.
Who knows? All right. And also in regards to the iPhone 5, Apple also departed from Google as far as coming out with their own map application, which featured the turn-by-turn navigation from TomTom. I'm sure we all can remember the controversies that came out after the maps came out in iOS 6, where you had stories about directions leading people off of cliffs and into the ocean and everywhere else. And
like huge landmarks ceased to exist.
Yeah, ceased to exist anywhere. And it led to the firing of the person who was in charge. So supposedly they've done a lot of work in fixing the... And, you know, and just as a side note, what I always found interesting was that living here on Long Island, I never have had any issues. I've used Apple Maps since iOS 6, going to several places on the island with turn-by-turn directions, including obscure places that would not necessarily be popular. And I've never gotten lost, never had the... In fact, you get 3 or 4 routes sometimes. So I've never encountered any of the problems that other people were reporting, which I would have thought I would, you know, considering that out east on the island is kind of obscure.
Did y'all see this article that said that Apple may start using Foursquare data to fill in some of their map?
I have it bookmarked. I haven't actually
I wouldn't
read the
do
article
that. That's
yet.
Not very reliable. That data set has got to be so ugly. Because it lets people add their own crap. You can put something anywhere.
Yeah, you can.
That's true. You do have the human factor that then comes into play.
Yeah, and if you expect people not to be stupid, you're pretty much...
Well, and who knows if they're really going to do it, right?
Right. It could be just rumor. All right, we'll take a break now, and when we come back, we will go to our mailbag, and then we are going to hear some of Alina's thoughts on the stories that we have just covered. We'll be right back.
You're so annoying.
Annoying.
Stop copying
me. Stop copying me.
Mom, tell her to stop copying me.
Mom, tell her to stop talking to me.
Kids will spend 10 minutes copying everything their sibling says.
You're such a doofus.
You're such a doofus.
How about 2 minutes to brush their teeth? Brushing for 2 minutes now can save your child from severe tooth pain later. For fun 2-minute videos to watch while brushing, visit 2min2x.org. 2 minutes twice a day. They have the time.
Mom!
A message from the Partnership for Healthy Mouths, Healthy Lives, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back. And we got a nice heavy mailbag today. We got lots of stuff. We got lots of reports from y'all. So yeah, keep those cards and letters coming. You can always email us, resources@serotalk.com. You can leave a comment on the blog. You can contact us on Twitter at twitter.com/tripleclickhome. Or you can call us on the Blab line, 866-997-2522. And you can also, of course, leave an iReport through iBlink Radio on the iThing or Android. Android, yeah, you can actually use that. But we'd really rather that you use the iPhone, being that this is Triple Click Home. First off, well, let's see, the first thing we got here, we got this email from Janine Stanley, and she has all kinds of stuff, all kinds of neat stuff in here. She's got a game that she reviews, a new game for us to waste our time with.
Just what we need, more mindless entertainment.
Just what we need, more mindless entertainment. That's absolutely. The cool thing is that we can actually play these mindlessly games
that
sighted people can play. I mean, we can't play Angry Birds, but we can play these. And let's see, she's got a recommendation for the ladies for an iPhone accessory. And talks about some practical things to do with transit times for public transportation. There's an app for that. Anyway, her email is posted in the show notes, and you can read it in all of its detail at the Triple Click Home website.
And we also have some other iReports. First one we have is from Dennis.
Hi, this is Dennis in Cincinnati. I'm looking for a good karaoke app that works with voice over on the iPhone. I've got the 4S with all the updates included for the iOS 6. I installed an app called Karaoke Anywhere, and I can actually get into the songs and play them and sing along with them. But the problem I'm having is I can't control the echo. There's a key change. There's reverb. VoiceOver picks up the icons on those, but when I double tap on them, it doesn't change anything. So apparently it's not designed to work with VoiceOver. So I'm looking for a karaoke app that will work with VoiceOver. So if you can come up with something like that, or if you know of one, pass it along. I'd appreciate it. Thank you so much, and I'll keep listening.
Thanks, Dennis. I don't know of anything like that.
No, I know it's been talked about on the VI phone list by some people, but I can't sing worth a lick, so it never has been anything that interested me, unfortunately.
Yeah, same here. Probably better that I stay away from those.
Yeah.
However, if one of y'all fine folks out there
that's listening,
knows
of one, pass it along, and we will make sure to mention that.
All right, and we next have another report from Sarah, I believe.
Hi, my name is Sarah Souza, and I'm calling from Northern California, and wanted to know if you guys can help me out a little bit. Myself, I'm legally blind, and my father is fully blind, and I'm trying to help him transition to using an iPhone. And we're having a problem because he has a hand tremor. And I've heard you guys talk a lot about being able to use iDevices for multiple disabilities. I wanted to know if you have any suggestions on how to help with using gestures on an iPhone if you have hand tremors. I've tried the assistive touch, but it gets kind of confusing. If you could do some kind of a podcast about assistive touch or ways to get around hand gestures, if you have a hand tremor, that'd be great. Thank you very much, and I appreciate listening to you guys on Triple Play Home.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I mean, I could be wrong, but I think David Woodbridge with the Vision Australia podcast, I thought he did something on assistive touch, a little podcast on that. When I went through their list of podcasts, I saw something on assistive touch. So that might be a good place to start. You guys know of anything?
I don't know much about assistive touch since I don't rely on it.
I haven't played with it either. I'm pretty sure I read somewhere that it now works with VoiceOver, but beyond that, I'd know nothing.
We'd really have to experiment a little bit. But if we find a podcast of that, then we will certainly pass that information
along. Right, we'll definitely let you know. Like I said, though, try looking at Vision Australia. I'm fairly certain I saw something.
Yeah, if anyone's got it, it would be David Woodbridge.
Yes, that's what I would think.
Keep those cards and letters coming, y'all. Thank you for all those cards and letters, you folks in television land.
All right. So next up, we have an interview that Jamie did with Alina and about her thoughts on some of the stories that we just covered. Take it away.
So Alina gets to join the podcast this month, even though she's not really in the podcast room with everyone else. But the really cool thing is she gets to basically state her opinions and no one can argue with her. Hey, Alina, good to have you along today.
I'm really okay with nobody arguing with me.
It's awesome. You just get to state your opinions and there they are, man. So the reason, let's talk about the reason you're not on the podcast. It's because you are somewhere really nice during the holidays. Where are you guys going?
I am going with my husband to Maui and the Big Island for 10 days.
Wow. Is this your first time there?
It is. It's my very first time in Hawaii, and it's very exciting. I've been to, I guess Australia would probably be the most tropical place I've ever been in my life, which was pretty darn awesome, but I've never been to Hawaii, and everybody says it's amazing, so including the people who live there. So I think the consensus is that there is no wrong time to go.
Yeah, I can imagine that being true. My wife and I took a cruise a couple years ago and went to the Bahamas in February, and was it nice. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, considering the fact that although the Northwest is not nearly as cold as some parts of the country, it's been in the mid-40s here for a couple weeks now, and I'm excited about 80.
Yeah. Nice, cool ocean breeze.
Yeah.
Nice tropical drink in your hand. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And
you'll be fine.
We have a coast here, of course, you know, being right on the ocean.
Right.
But the Oregon coast very rarely gets warm.
Okay.
And the water temperature is always frigid. So.
Oh, gotcha.
Some people love the Oregon coast. I don't know that I'm one of them.
Right. Well, let's talk tech for a few minutes. And,
all right.
If I just say the year in Apple news, what are some thoughts that kind of float to the top of your brain there?
Well, I think that probably the first thing that comes to mind is all of the new products that they've come out with this year.
Right.
Including the iPhone 5, the iPad mini, the reboot of many of their Mac lines, and to me, there's only been great improvement. Oh, and we can't forget Mountain Lion, which
right. Oh, yeah.
I use myself in iOS 6. And I think that from an accessibility standpoint, all we have seen is more things that are better for us. And that's really exciting to me. I think that when Apple first started down this journey of making their products accessible, there was a lot of naysayers in the community who said, oh, well, they're just doing it because they have to. And that may have been true at the beginning, but I think they've demonstrated to us time and time again that not only are they doing this because they want to, but that they're going to continue to make it better and they want our feedback and they appreciate it. So I think that's really awesome.
Yeah, I think they've gone a long ways past the bare minimum at this point. I definitely agree with you. So when did you actually start using VoiceOver and using a Mac?
I started my using VoiceOver back in 2009. Well, that's when I got my first Mac that had OS X on it.
Gotcha.
I was a low vision person during my childhood and had used a Macintosh computer up until college. And then once I lost my ability to read print, I moved to a screen reader and was basically in the position of having to move to a PC. It was not my choice, and I was not happy about it.
Right.
So then when my PC desktop died in the early part of 2009, and I sat down with my husband, and we had a chat about what did we want to spend our money on.
Right.
And we decided that I could go back to the Mac. And thanks to other podcasts like Screenless Switchers, I was aware of how accessible it was. So that was really exciting.
So you've really seen the improvements, because that would have been in 2009. Was that Leopard at that point?
That was Leopard, yep.
Yeah. So good old Fred. Is that the voice that kind of came?
Yes. The move to Alex was huge.
You know, it's funny for me because the first introduction to a computer of any kind was a friend of mine that had an old Apple computer. And I don't even remember the model number. This would have been back in the, probably the mid-90s. And I remember thinking, gosh, I wish I could use a computer like that. And then
by the time I started actually being interested in the computer, it would have been maybe even a little farther back than that. Anyway, when I finally got interested in computers, I was introduced to the PC. So when I watched the progress of VoiceOver and people began to really use the Mac, then it was almost like kind of coming full circle for me too. It's like sort of the idea that I could actually use that Apple computer was kind of intriguing to me. So when I just purchased my MacBook in the past few weeks, it's funny because I had a chance to play with one for a real short time, and I'm surprised at how much I remember.
Yeah.
I was talking to someone this morning about using VoiceOver on the Mac, and this person is just learning. And my comment was, it's logical. It just makes a lot of sense. They've done a good job of keeping it very intuitive. So,
yeah. And I really appreciate them moving to having multiple options for how people use their keyboards.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a client a while back who had severe dexterity issues, and having the option of him using his trackpad or just the arrow keys without having to mess with two hands was pretty awesome. So
right.
I really appreciate them realizing that most of us don't want to have to use both hands all the time. And some of us can't use both hands, actually.
Yeah. So have you had a chance to play with iTunes 11 yet?
I have had very little time with iTunes 11. It is on my computer now.
Right.
And I think I'm sort of in the camp with Peter and Buddy, which is that I only use iTunes if I have to.
Yeah.
It's very bloated. I will say, though, that the change to the interface seems to have kind of gotten rid of some of the lagginess I was having with VoiceOver. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if that was just a change by making it a little more simplified. I'm hoping that's really what it comes down to.
Yeah.
I have seen some people on Twitter complain about the search, but I'm not really sure if the search needs to be more specific now, if that's part of the problem.
Mm-hmm.
But I do like the way the layout is now. I think it's improved.
I think it's moderately better in Windows. Yeah. I actually do think it's a little faster, even in Windows.
Okay.
But it's still, for some reason, the store is always the problem in Windows. It's But anyway.
Even on the Mac, the store is like, can it just load? I'm tired of waiting.
Which is why we all buy music on our iPhones, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And I will say that I'm totally not an iTunes purchaser.
No. So. Yeah. Well, of course, the stories now are that iTunes is probably going away at some point, maybe moving toward apps, more an app for music and an app for different things instead of this one big. Yeah.
I think, honestly, everybody would appreciate that.
Yeah, I think so, too.
To me, it's one of Apple's worst pieces of software that they've ever created.
Right.
They've tried to make it better over the years, and I'm not sure that they've actually succeeded. And for those of us who just want a music player, it's just way overloaded.
Right. And, of course, as we record this, there's just been the announcement of some improved accessibility in iWork for iOS. I don't know if you've had a chance to, or if you have that on your iPhone or not.
I don't. Again, this is one of those, there are some applications that I have on my Mac that I don't really like. Pages is probably one of them.
Yeah.
I will admit that I primarily use TextEdit because most of the word processing that I have to do is very simple. It doesn't require a lot of formatting. It doesn't require fanciness.
Sure.
And I think I mentioned this on one of our other podcasts. There is an app that's free that's called Bean, B-E-A-N. Yeah. And most of the formatting can be done with keyboard commands.
Nice.
And it's really simple to use. And it makes pages just look like, again, bloatware.
Wow.
I know that they wanted to follow in the footsteps of Microsoft and make their word processor complex, right?
Right.
With all these layouts and options for people. But I think in the end, I'm not sure where our community stands for how complicated they want their word processor to be. But I am really happy to hear that the new iWork is much more usable, because I know that for a long time, it was like, why would I even bother buying pages for my iPhone or my iPad when it's not really usable?
Right. So thinking ahead, if you just kind of could put a wish list together, not necessarily a long one, but for 2013, what are some things that you think we might see or would that you would hope to see from Apple?
This is one of those, like, how much more do we need?
Yeah, that's a good point.
It's interesting because I was talking with somebody the other day and they were getting ready to purchase their iPhone and they wanted my perspective. And I said, well, you might think I'm crazy to say this, but I would actually tell you to buy the 4S. And they said, well, why? And I said, well, because it saves you $100 and it works really well. Mm-hmm. And I think that there are people out there that would say, well, it's old technology. Well, it's a year old. Yes, you're correct.
Yeah, right.
But there's no drawback, I guess, in my opinion, to owning the 4S as opposed to the 5. And so I think the one thing that I would want to see, and this is speaking from a future educator's perspective, is the Retina display on the Mini. I foresee our school districts purchasing the Mini as opposed to the standard iPad because it does save them money. And we all know that that's what it comes down to in education a lot of the times. And from the teachers that I've spoken with, our low vision kids that are using the iPad 3, which has the Retina display, it's a significant improvement for them. So if it really makes that big of a difference for our low vision kids, then I would want to see a Mini with a Retina display. And I think they've already said that that's coming.
Yeah.
As an Apple TV user, I think I would like to see more options for what I can actually view using my Apple TV.
Mm-hmm.
I like that it has Hulu Plus, but I don't currently subscribe to Hulu Plus. And it would be really nice if they could just have like the standard Hulu as well as maybe the Amazon. I've gone back and forth on the Prime purchase because you can actually get a monthly subscription to Amazon Prime now as opposed to paying the $80 for the year.
Right.
And if you only want it temporarily, it comes with their streaming package. So
yes,
that's kind of been in the back of my head. But again, I would want my Apple TV to be able to access that because watching things on my computer is not something we often, well, I might do it myself, but if my husband and I are watching something, then he actually wants it on the screen.
Sure. Yeah. Well, all right. We've got you on record. We know what your wish list is, and we're going to see if Apple is listening and gives you all that good stuff.
Oh,
we'll give you credit if they,
oh, yeah, I really, really want us to be able to navigate tables in our word processors, but
you know, that's
I don't know
what
if that's
I,
ever coming.
I wonder why that is such a sticking point. That puzzles me.
I don't understand.
I don't either.
It's one of those things where I'll get documents for classes or from other people. And if it has a table in it, what I end up doing is because I can tell that I'm obviously not getting everything that's on the page, is I'll end up selecting all of the text and pasting and matching it into my original style in a new document, which strips the table out.
Oh, wow. Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then I can go, oh, that's what's actually on this page.
Yeah. No, if I ever get a chance to interview someone from Apple Accessibility, that is going to be a question I will ask. They may not answer it, but I'm going to ask.
Right. Can you please let us actually navigate tables?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, all right. I'm sure that you are going to have a great time in Hawaii. Wish you and your husband the best over there.
Yeah, we will have a great time. And I look forward to listening in on the podcast once it's finished and seeing what all you guys covered.
You'll be primed and ready in January. I can already tell. You're going to be ready to do that podcast when you get back, I think.
All right, Jamie. Thanks.
Very good. You take care.
Welcome back, everybody. And we are going to wrap up tonight with a story that basically sums up the thoughts that I personally have been having lately about the Apple versus Android conundrum. And basically, this article talks about how accessibility is improving on both platforms. And at the end of the day, the winner is the consumer, us blind folks in this particular case. And I find myself in a lot of agreement. The first few times I took a foray into Android, I didn't like it. It was very kludgy. There wasn't a lot of really deep access. But recently, I had a chance to play around with a Nexus 4. For a while, and I found that when we got to version 4.2, things have gotten much better. And so we're at a place now where there's usable accessibility on Android. It's not perfect. There's things that could be improved, but it's much better than it used to be. And I can actually tell people that they'll be okay on either platform. Things will be a little easier on the iPhone platform, but they can make do either way. And I think that's a win for us because we, in the past, we've had to pay extra for our screen readers. I remember it wasn't that long ago that I had a Windows Mobile 6.5 device and then had to pay $300 for a screen reader. So in the grand scheme of things, we're doing all right. And I think that's
we win.
That's a plus.
Yep, I agree. More choice is better.
Yep, I think the days of bolted-on access that we have to pay extra for are rapidly coming to an end.
And good riddance to them.
This makes me happy.
Yeah.
Good riddance, yeah.
All right, folks, that will be a wrap for us. We appreciate everybody listening, and I'm sure that Alina will be back with us full-time next month.
In January.
If we aren't all gone because December 21st rolls around.
Yeah, if you're hearing this podcast, the world did not end. So if you're not hearing this podcast, the world ended and we
wasted a bunch of time.
None of us care.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
All right, you can follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/PBOSSLEY.
And you can follow me on Twitter at, assuming that I'm still here, at twitter.com/bbrannan. That's B-B-R-A-N-N-A-N.
And you can follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/MacForTheBlind. M-A-C-F-O-R-T-H-B-L-I-N-D.
T-H-E.
Yes. Did I say that?
You skipped the E.
I don't know how to spell. Yeah. I say it in my sleep, so.
It's Mac for the Blind without the E this week.
Yeah, this week. This is the special site that only the Triple Click Home people
Mac
get to
Force
follow.
Blind.
Yeah. Yes. Only
and the and the show's Twitter feed is, of course, twitter.com/TripleClickHome. We'll see you next time.